do you watch these days on TV that's new shows?
New shows?
So let's take cartoons out of
it. Cartoons out of the loop. Okay. My brother really likes that House show. So I'll watch that with him every now and again. And I think I haven't seen much of the first season or so, but I'm inclined to think that that show is probably peaked and it's getting a little more, you know, it's doing the thing where like it has to do focus more on the characters and less on the mystery of this of the,
yeah,
the
right,
mystery
right.
And I mean that stuff can be interesting, but I don't know. At the same time, they just went through this whole thing with him where he was like about to learn his lesson about taking Vicodin or whatever, and he didn't really, and so it's
he
kind of
never,
like
he should never learn that lesson.
Yeah, he
that stuff's
never,
great.
Never learn that lesson, and so I don't know. So my opinion of that show is kind of
I would have
optimistic.
I don't watch it because I'm usually either at work or school or something from like 8 to 10 at night.
That's
most
a rough
night.
Time.
So I don't get to watch primetime stuff, and I don't know if I would either way.
You got the DVDR though. You got to
that's true.
Get
that's
all
true.
Over that.
But
American Idol now, so that pretty much takes over.
Right, yeah, actually, you know, I do end up watching that because my wife is usually watching it when
yeah.
I'm in there. And every time I tell someone that, they think it's an excuse that I actually love the show. But I really don't. Most of the time, I'm not even, you know,
invested
paying
at all.
Attention. Yeah.
Yeah.
The thing about House is I like Hugh Laurie a lot. I grew up, I mentioned this before, reading mostly British stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And the BBC adaptations of the P.G. Wodehouse, Jeeves and Wooster stuff was Hugh Laurie and Stephen Fry.
That's right. I remember
yeah.
seeing a couple of those on...
I have all those on
those are
DVD
hilarious. My parents love those, yeah.
Yeah. And
I got a kick out of those, too.
I've always loved him. I own the whole series of Blackadder,
mm-hmm.
Which he, after the first season, he was in pretty regularly. In the last two series, he was... they don't call them seasons there. They call them series.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Which is kind of confusing.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. But in the last two series, he had as much screen time as Rowan Atkinson did. But I've always loved Hugh Laurie, and it's hard for me, though, to watch him play...
American.
Yeah.
And serious.
There's a thing about British actors playing American accents. You know, certain American actors... And I'm not British, so I can't say
yeah.
this, you know, is completely true. But certain American actors, like Gwyneth Paltrow and stuff, seem to have made their career off of speaking in British accents in
yeah.
movies and doing it rather well.
Or they get away with it.
Exactly. Yeah, they
the
get away with
it. That's the best way to say it,
and
I suppose.
There's always a point with any Australian or British or Irish actors where you can totally tell they're just trying too hard on their R's. Their R's are just being hammered so that
mm-hmm.
they sound American. Where you know, I mean, there's so many different... dialects and accents and stuff in America where that you don't necessarily have to, I mean, you can have a slight, you don't have to hammer down the R and you can sound like you're from the East Coast
exactly.
or something like that.
And
you know,
so you think they kind of end up sounding like generic American.
Yeah, or like
it's just
Californians.
To be honest, based on that story that we heard in class about Tom Cruise doing the Irish dialects in Far and Away,
yeah.
I'm inclined to think that probably is the exact same thing if you're coming from the other side. So I'll bet that, you know,
but,
people will like look at Gwyneth
yeah,
Paltrow
yeah.
and say, oh, well, she's doing this accent, and then she's doing that one. Or she's just sticking with one that's too flat and doesn't have any locality.
Well,
fit where she's supposed to be from in the story.
Yes. And a lot of characters will just... A lot of characters will just let they'll try for the first couple scenes, it seems like, and then just give it up.
Yeah.
I think that a lot of people always bring up Leonardo DiCaprio for various things. That,
yeah.
That, you know, I think he was nominated for Blood Diamond.
Yes,
but,
he was.
But from what I heard from the previews, I'm not going to watch it until it comes out in video, maybe. But from what I saw from the previews... His accent was just atrocious, deplorable, whatever it's supposed to be. This the South African Dutch.
Yeah, it could be a rough one. I think I don't know if it's Dutch or what, but.
And then in Gangs of New York, he had this pseudo kind of Irish thing going that wasn't really, and it just.
Well, they made a point in that movie talking about how he grew up sort of with like separate parents,
yeah, right,
so that
right.
it would make sense that he would be
sure.
Speaking.
There always has to be some sort of excuse. So just
yeah,
like
yeah.
the reason why they always say that. You know, in any Schwarzenegger film, even if he's an American guy, you know, he spent 14 years in Austria or whatever.
Usually something about his dad, you know. His
right.
dad was in the Austrian army.
Sure,
that's
sure.
why he's so tough because, you know, he
yeah.
had him getting up. And
another interesting thing about accents, the reason I was all bringing this up is because I think the worst one of all time is Kevin Costner in Prince of Thieves, where he...
the non-accent?
Yeah. He every once in a while, he doesn't say an R or two. What are you doing over there? A little bit. Not really. And then he just... Then after that, it's just Kevin Costner. It's Waterworld. It's Field of Dreams. It's whatever. It's just kind of him sleepwalking through his lines.
But you have to wonder if that's worth blaming Kevin Costner over, or if that was just some directorial decision. It's like
Kevin
Reynolds, I
think, was the one who directed it, wasn't he?
I don't remember.
I know that Kevin Reynolds directed Waterworld. And he directed... you ever seen Rapa Nui? He's done some decent stuff. Kevin Reynolds has done some decent stuff. And I think he's a good director, but... And Prince of Thieves had, you know, it was good visual.
It was a good action movie.
Yeah, I enjoyed it.
Alan Rickman was great as the Rickman's sheriff of good, Nottingham. Yeah.
You know, the guy who was Rickman's right-hand man, who has a super long black hair, he was the bad guy in The Crow.
That guy's great.
That guy. I don't know his name, but I love that guy. Every time I see him, he can only play the sleaziest, slimiest characters.
Yeah, that's true. I think he was the captain of, like, the bounty hunter group or whatever in Alien Resurrection, which is why I thought this could be interesting, but then they killed him in, like, the first 20 minutes, and I'm like, that's lame. Why would you do that? And then keep Ron Perlman around.
You don't like Ron Perlman?
No, I like him sometimes. He took me a while to get a sense of him. I guess I liked him in Hellboy, though I didn't like that movie that much, and everybody seemed to think that movie was
great. I enjoyed it. It definitely didn't have the same feel as the comics because of the look, mostly.
Yeah.
Mignola.
Mignola,
yeah. Did you ever see the screw-on head?
The pilot that they did. Hopefully Adult Swim will get, because Brian Fuller does really cool stuff. I like almost everything.
Yeah, they already said that, I went online and they were doing this vote thing, like where you could vote to see, to try to get one of these pilots that they were showing on the air, and Comedy Central, of course, isn't going to pick up that. It's I don't even know if it's quite funny enough to be something on.
Well, and it's not right for comedy. Like, I don't even think Futurama will play well on Comedy Central, even if they get new episodes. Comedy Central is bread and butter. It's South Park, it's Daily Show, and then it's reruns of Weekend at Bernie's 3.
I think Colbert Report actually gets more
than Daily Show.
Yeah, more than Daily Show at this point,
but it's that same sort of, like, it's fake news satire, and then it's sort of, I don't know, Comedy Central, I just don't see doing animation super much justice, whether comedy or otherwise. I think it's just like that's the realm of Adult Swim with the 18 to 34 male demographic, the almighty demographic, you know? So Screw-On Head, I think, would definitely be great for Adult Swim.
I think it's interesting that they... it's one of those ideas that's is kind of complicated, and the idea itself ends up being funnier than a lot of the things in there. But then they get relatively big names.
Yeah, they got Patton Oswalt, who doesn't sound like Patton Oswalt,
right?
But that's he's a comic book guy.
Giamatti, I think what's his name from David Hyde Pierce?
David Hyde Pierce,
and then I think Molly Shannon was in the
pilot
too.
Yeah, Molly Shannon was Prudence.
Right, and you know it's big enough names, but sometimes you wonder, you know, the people who are the most highly regarded voice actors for video games, cartoons, etc., are generally not
big name
people, except for in the case of Mark Hamill or people like that.
Yeah, and that's sort of a weird retroactive thing because Hamill is still, I would say, a voice actor. And I can bring this up because I have some passion about this because I think I appreciate my cartoons and I appreciate good, real voice acting. And Billy West is the first one to come to mind when you talk about voice actors versus actors that are just doing their voices.
Sure, yeah.
So, you know, Cameron Diaz is what he always bitches about. Cameron Diaz will come in and sound like Cameron Diaz for $20 million in Shrek, and, you know, there's no work for regular voice actors that do voices, you know, that don't just sound like themselves when they talk. And you're right, Screw-On Head, a couple of those characters did just sound like Patton Oswalt obviously didn't. He was doing
I don't think that would have had even less votes or viewing audience online for it if it had been no names.
Yeah,
you know,
I'm inclined. Yeah, that was a good one, but I hated when they just the new CGI Pixar piece of crap that's just going to have these five big stars come in and sound like themselves.
Sure, in certain cases there are actors. Who have voices built for that sort of thing.
Oh, yeah.
In Finding Nemo, the guy, everybody loves Raymond's brother. I always forget the guy's
name.
The guy who played Robert. Yeah, and he has this deep, booming voice that's, like, really characterized. Yeah. And it really does seem like, you know, he would be in a lot more voice things. But since
he's sort of fit that role.
Yeah, exactly. And then there's a lot of, I don't know, I mean, for the most part, you know, actors were taught at early on in their careers that, one thing that makes someone an actor is, like, the vocal inflections and stuff, and they're not just sounding monotone the whole time. And so, you know,
like us.
Yeah. So in theory, any actor could probably do some voice acting, but the people who are just voice actors, who begin that way, those people are, you know,
they're real craft. They're craftsmen. And to bring up Billy West again, just because I've heard a few interviews with him, he was discussing when he started doing Popeye for, I guess they were doing a new version of Popeye, and the Popeye voice is this complicated. He was listening to some monks from Nepal or something doing a certain kind of chanting, and it's a real low, but he says that what they do is they break their voice, like, so it's two different octaves at the same time. And that's how you have to do Popeye. And he demonstrated it. Like, he demonstrated, well, it's like this, and then it's like, you know. Yeah. And then he did him at the same time. And I'm like, that is actual, that's talent, and that's just, that's craft, and that's paying attention.
Yeah,
and that's
but
research.
At the same time, you know, I've seen Dave Coulier and Full House do constant Popeye impressions that really weren't that bad. And so I think that maybe he was overthinking.
Yeah, he did
a little
the, ah, ka, 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 ka. You know.
Whoa. That one. Whoa. Blow me down.
But if you're going to do Popeye the whole time, you have to be able to do ah, ka, ka, and whoa at the same time, you know.
So
basically it's the difference between, I don't know, like, I like some industrial music, but I don't like the crappy new industrial music. Like, I like Nine Inch Nails, but I don't like, I don't know, whatever some crappy new band is that tries to sound like Nine Inch Nails.
Name it. Every new band is crappy.
It. But I could, even if they sound similar, there's a difference there. I mean, he's putting more, like, production time into what songs that he makes. And so it's at 10% better, which ultimately makes it just a better performance.
Yeah. Well, it's hard to say with music because music's so subjective.
Yeah,
and,
that's true.
In, you know, I guess kind of the talent that you're watching on screen is usually, it can be kind of subjective. But for the most part, you know when you're seeing somebody acting poorly.
Going to try to have a little bit of cohesion this time, and I think what we're going to stick with as the big overriding theme for our podcast is going to be things in the 80s being compared to things now.
Yes.
And us being total, like, whores for nostalgia about how oh, that was so great and that was great, and then sort of through debate and discussion working out whether or not they were actually great or whether we have to yield to the fact that what is going on now is either better or worse, and for what particular reasons based on our filmic, you know, scholarly understandings and such.
Scholarly.
Yes.
And you know, this started when I asked you if you had seen 300 yet, and have you yet?
No, but I've read the first three comics, and I should have just read them all because they're really quick.
I just went into Borders and just read the whole thing because it's not, it's all in this book format, and the way he actually wanted to print from the beginning was bigger pages.
Well, horizontal, yeah.
Yeah.
That's the form I'm looking at.
Yeah, and so I did see it, and you suggested comparing it to the sword and sorcery, or sorcerer, depending on
I thought it would be a loose way to connect sort of a what's in the 80s to what's the what's now thing could then relate to some kind of a review of a more modern movie, and so you could review 300 if you felt like doing that.
And that's totally fine. I think that the idea behind 300, though, since it has the historical
It's not a sword and sorcerer.
It's not the same type of thing, but it definitely is similar in the not even in the
no,
it's
a
form.
Thin road. That one we might just abandon that and not care about having a connection.
The point is, we want to talk about Conan right now.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I think that was where I drew the parallel, was Conan and, like, macho-ness and stuff.
And the idea behind these sword and sorcery movies was that there were people with swords, and then there were sorcerers.
Well, that's sort of the alliteration that you used to pitch the whole thing. Yeah, so it's like, it was a fantastical world of medievalness with swords and barbarians and dragons and magic.
And you know, there's a very big group of people that follows this stuff religiously in form of writing and reading. There's still magazines that are just based around. There's actually one called Sword and Sorcery, I think, and they're based around just the idea of you know, the guy who wrote the Conan stories years ago. It wasn't like he was the only person doing that. There was a lot of people writing those types of stories.
Just kinds of like...
Yeah,
pulp,
some sort of barbarian guy, and there's dragons, or not necessarily dragons, but, you know... I mean, it's almost like caveman-like people, but with more...
There's fantastical things happening that are not... It's not steampunk, and it's not cyberpunk, it's stonepunk. There you go. I just coined that. I own that now.
Yeah, you're going to have to register that with the Writers Guild or something.
The Writers Guild.
I've seen much less of these movies than you have. I was actually I looked at a list somewhere online, and I don't know if you'll agree with this, but they put the Lord of the Rings movies into the sword and sorcery
Oh yeah, I would
genre,
agree.
and they said obviously, you know, those are the best of these movies. I mean, because I think
production size, production wise, and everything, story, and story content,
they're some of the best movies ever made, probably.
Absolutely.
And so you can put those at the top of the list, and after that you get things like the first Conan movie. Uh-huh. I don't know if many people would say the second one's that great. And you know, on down there, one of them was Dragon Slayer. Was that
Dragon Slayer's one?
I've never seen that. Yeah.
And if they're going to make a Hobbit movie that would have Smaug the dragon, then it might be better than the Dragons and Dragon Slayer. But Dragon Slayer, it's a really weird kind of quirky movie.
When did it come out? Do you know?
It came out in like 87, or maybe even earlier than that, maybe like 82.
Because I don't remember it when I was a kid.
Well, I remember it from when I was like a kid, but it was like an old movie at that point. And it's oh god, who was the actor's name? He played Milos in the second Ghostbuster movie. Peter McNichol, I think, is his name.
I haven't watched the second Ghostbusters movie in years.
Anyway, so he's like this apprentice to a sorcerer, and the sorcerer dies, and he's supposed to go do something with a dragon. I don't want to just lay out the whole plot, because that stuff's usually pretty boring. Anyway, it's kind of a slow movie.
What's it rated?
You know, back then they had PG and R, so I think it's probably rated.
Well, PG-13 came out in 83, I think.
But it came out...
82 or 83.
It was motivated by Spielberg pushing for it because of Temple of Doom.
But so there were PG-13 movies before. The first PG-13 movie was one of the Police Academy movies.
Oh, weird. Okay, so that probably would have been in the mid-80s. So I think that this, I would say, if you just want to care about what it is considered by modern standards or whatever, it's probably a PG-13. You know, there's a little bit of violence and stuff. But the dragons in that, in my opinion, they look like the way dragons should look. If you're
animatronic, robotic.
There was probably some animatronics in there. There might have even been some early CG.
Really?
Maybe it was models or matte painting. They did some old style stuff.
Any Rick
techniques.
Baker involvement? No Rick Baker?
You mean R2-D2?
What's his name? The puppet master guy who makes all the great models. And
oh, no, I don't think there was... maybe. I mean, I don't know if... Like, I don't think Stan Winston was around yet doing all the stuff he did like he did for Aliens and stuff.
Aliens? Oh, okay.
Well, he might have been involved in it. But the basic...
Who directed this movie? I
do not
all
know.
I know about is the cover. I've seen the cover many
times.
Yeah,
I don't know much about it. Who's except in that it? It looks like it's shot in... well, like Peter McNichol, and then that's about the only name I can recognize. There's an old English guy. I think he's the same guy. He had a beard. He's the same guy that played God in Time Bandits.
Okay, all right.
And he's a pretty famous guy, I think, from the old school of English.
So famous that we remember his name clearly.
Yes, well, you know, I don't know that kind of stuff. But, at least not offhand. But it looks like, I mean, you know, there's not a lot of CG backgrounds. They shot it on location. I mean, this is part of why the 80s was good, because I guess they either had the budget or they didn't have the option to shoot it like all CG, so they just had to kind of go out and go into the woods and go in, you know, the countryside in England and stuff. And they shot this one in England, I'm pretty sure, because I think I sat through the credits one time. It was on AMC here one Friday afternoon or one Friday night a couple months ago. And if you check AMC religiously on Friday evenings, you might see it, though usually they're just doing horror movies nowadays.
So where would you put this in the whole canon of this genre? Right? Yeah,
it's more of a drama. The whole big theme is that the town will sacrifice a virgin to the dragon, like to keep things calm and pacified. So it's that whole theme of you know, like the lottery, you know.
Sure. Yeah.
But then naturally the queen or the daughter, the princess, finds out that the king has taken her name out of the lottery, and it becomes, so it gets into some politics there a little bit, and some like actual social class issues and stuff. And then the idea that it's sort of the bumbling assistant to the magician that's trying to take on the dragon. So he's not a knight. It's not, I think when I was a kid, I didn't care for it much, because always when I'm looking at for my movies, I'm like, I want to see an action movie. I want there to be good action, and I want there to be somebody I can quickly identify with. That's, you know, like, that's the guy. That's the guy that's going to
win. Like, that's me.
That's me, exactly, pretty much. And I'm like, yeah, that's me, but that's not how I want to pretend I am if I'm in a movie.
Did you ever read the series of books by, I couldn't possibly tell you the name, but I read them when I was younger. The Black Cauldron was one of them in the series.
Oh, that's right.
And the
no.
first one was Taran Pigboy or something like that. And that it's got the same idea with the kid who's
kind of bumbling. And
yeah, exactly.
Then he has to kind of figure it out and wise up.
Yeah,
and get strong.
Right. And I don't even know if that I know that had sorcery in it, but
yeah, it's kind of like that. So I would say, I mean, this is all one big round way for me to say that it's actually kind of a boring movie, but it's kind of a good movie, and the end and the visual effects at the end are really cool. So I don't know. It's worth seeing, and I would definitely put it. I mean, if you're talking about within that genre, I would put it in the high. I'd put it in the top 25. I mean, because there's more than
25.
Oh, there's probably a lot of really awful ones, like the auteur movies and stuff that I just like. You know, I haven't seen.
There's auteur sword and sorcery movies.
Well, auteur was the sword and sorcery thing, wasn't it?
I thought you meant like the auteur theory.
No, not auteur. I meant the guy whose name is auteur. And he, yeah, and he'd fight like a giant spider. They did a Mystery Science Theater about one of them.
I don't know if
it was hilarious. And he's all hang gliding, and they're like, wait.
So we're not talking about Hitchcock directing a sword and sorcery.
No, we're not. I mean,
Godard or something.
I don't know who, if we ever got any big director. Okay, Ron Howard did Willow.
Willow, actually, I was about to bring that up. But that is my favorite of that genre, I think. I like the Lord of the Rings movies, and I would put those apart. But I think that Willow is fantastic. I love Willow.
Willow's good. I mean, the locations were cool. Yeah. I think they might have done that in New Zealand as well as the Lord of the Rings. I'm not sure.
Why not?
You know, the fact that it was about a little guy, you know, it was his whole culture, and then he happened to go off and take on this big, big thing.
But more importantly, you watch it to see Val Kilmer with black, long hair, constantly being drunk, which I think he was. And he might have been during the filming, too.
It's possible.
And then, you know, chopping things' heads off. The dragon that
Mardigan.
Comes out of... Yeah, Mad Mardigan, yeah. The dragon that comes out of that hunk of stuff... You remember that part? And it's got two heads.
Oh yeah, that's a dragon kind of. I guess it's more of a. It's like a troll.
Yeah,
it comes out of
a
troll, and then,
right.
Yeah, that's a pretty decent dragon because it looks mean. That's what I mean with Dragon Slayer, is that the dragons in like what is it, Dragonheart?
Well,
I
guess Dragonheart sucked. Yeah.
Dragonheart sucked. but even like that Aragorn movie that just came out, they look like weird. They look like kind of friendly or cartoony. They just don't because they're all CG. They don't look. Dragons should look sharp and dangerous and pointed.
Should they?
Yeah, because they're scary, and they should be scary. They're like, you know, they should look like a lizard
yeah.
That's gross and mean.
Not have big human eyes and
not
long
big,
eyelashes.
Yeah, not big human eyes and long eyelashes. It shouldn't look like Icarus from Dragon Ball Z. If anyone catches that reference, which is pretty obscure.
Well, you know, I one thing about those the dragon thing in Willow is that it's very obviously. Like really bad effects in a couple parts. Like when they showed it's like it's almost like they blue screened it or something. But they didn't. Like the dragon part was blue screened.
It's like a traveling mat.
Mat lines. And I remember that being the worst looking part of the movie. Even when I was a kid, and I absolutely loved that thing. My parents didn't, you know, let me see a lot of things that would be construed as like any sort of like satanic or pagan type thing. So I didn't see Masters of the Universe as a kid, which I'm glad I didn't because I did watch it a couple years ago and it was one of the worst movies I've ever seen.
I'm ready to watch that again just to catch up.
But my parents let me go see Willow because it was George Lucas produced it and the you know the people involved and I think I don't know maybe they felt it was fine because it had small people in it.
It was quaint and cute. That's kind of it. Kind of wasn't a lot of
and McDonald's was. Putting out their merchandise.
Exactly. Gotta love the McDonald's merchandise. If you saved any of that in the plastic that it came in from the Happy Meals, it's probably worth a lot now.
I don't think I did. I didn't save anything. Even when I knew things were going to be worth, I was given toys as a kid, and people told me, you know, this is going to be worth money someday. I don't know how they knew that. And then I just ripped them open and broke them to pieces.
You played with them, heaven forbid.
I did, yeah. I actually have. I've kept a lot of the first generation Star Wars toys.
You got those still?
Yeah.
Those are valuable even if they're out of the
80s,
box.
From the early 80s, yeah. My parents bought me that stuff when I was an infant. They thought it was great. And I have first edition Transformers.
Oh, man, I wish I had some of those. The GoBots.
Yeah, Ninja Turtles.
Best theme song ever is
which
the GoBots,
GoBots
theme.
Yeah. I wonder if they can make a Transformers movie, why not a GoBots movie? Come on.
I don't know. I mean,
because it's
it
too
might,
much of a ripoff.
It might play better than a Transformers movie, though. I don't know. I'm going to hold off on the Transformers. Though, but back to Spielberg and ratings.
Yeah.
In the news lately, it was that the Transformers was going to get an R rating, and then Spielberg came in and talked to an MPAA, and said, and now it's PG-13.
Yeah, Shia LaBeouf said that he said it shouldn't have been R. He said there was just a lot of really intense robot punching action,
yeah,
which I don't think would ever warrant an R. So there had to be more than that.
Some people think that it's, just sort of like a made up kind of like get the fanboys going. Right. Oh yeah, it's gonna be hardcore. Sweet.
Yeah, it's. I knew this was gonna happen, but the Aqua Teen Hunger Force : whatever movie film
for theaters.
Yeah. This, I knew it was going to be rated R, but when I first saw a trailer with they put a huge rated R thing at the end of it on Adult Swim the other night, and I think that was just to really focus on the fact that it was rated R.
Yeah.
And I was, like, stunned. I knew it was going to be rated R. I knew it was rated R. They told me that, you know, months ago. And so it comes up, and it goes, rated R. And I was like, I don't even really like that show that much, but I can't wait to watch a rated R cartoon. I don't know why.
I want to see if it'll play for 80 minutes. If they really have figured out to make a way to make it funny,
there's no plot ever in a 12-minute show that they air. There's no plot.
Oh, you haven't watched some of the new ones, man. Frisky Dingo, that totally develops the story.
No, I'm talking about Aqua Teen Hunger Force.
Oh, Aqua Teen, Aqua Teen's pretty non-causal, non-plot. Though they do like develop a character and then bring another character in later, and it's like past information is referenced in some places. So there is some sense of causality, but they pretty much abandon it.
Like a certain John Hughes movie.
Oh yeah, I think that Breakfast Club is actually a pretty good movie.
And
if you had to pick one John Hughes movie, and I'm not a huge John Hughes fan, but I can say that in the 80s he did a certain style that had to do with coming of age teenagers in groups, more than one group, and not just being like this is about the geeks and this is about the girls and not
even though
too melodramatic.
Even though they're ridiculous stereotypes. That doesn't bother you?
Well, I mean, in Breakfast Club, you think they're ridiculous stereotypes?
Yeah, we'll start off. So you like Breakfast Club.
I hate
Breakfast Club. I think that is his worst movie.
Okay.
That's not true. Uncle Buck is really bad.
There's some
worse movies than that. I had never really liked any John Hughes stuff except for the things that he didn't direct.
So you're a Home Alone fan, of course.
I liked Home Alone.
Hard not to like Home Alone.
Yeah, there's certain ones. Actually, I really enjoy very bad movies, and so I really liked Baby's Day Out.
Oh,
which I think he actually might have directed, too.
I don't think I saw
it. It is awful. It is fantastically awful.
Does it play almost like some kind of silent movie where it's just like the baby walks off the 2x4 and it's hanging on the...
And it has it was the precursor to the Michael Bay ridiculously... so many cuts you can't even imagine.
Oh, man.
Because the more horrible... Actually, you know what's even worse than that? It's Sinbad's House Guest. Have you seen that one?
Is that the one with Phil Hartman?
Yeah.
Yeah, I have seen
there,
that.
There are more cuts in that than any movie in the history of the earth. And I'm telling you, if Terrence Malick came out with a 19-hour long movie, there would be less cuts in that than there are in House Guest, which is an hour and a half long. It is so outrageously edited. The editor should have been murdered. He should have been killed by, you know...
Maybe that's all he had to work with.
Yeah.
Maybe Sinbad was such a...
Theo Van Gogh was murdered for putting out a supposedly anti-Islam movie. Those Islam guys should have murdered the editor of House Guest instead of Theo Van Gogh, because he's more of a front to humanity and all of mankind than
maybe
anything.
Maybe the Islamic fundamentalists love the cutting. I mean, some of them...
So anyway, I don't particularly like John Hughes. I've seen all the stuff, and...
How do you want to play this Breakfast Club thing? Do you want me to talk it up and then you to break it down, or do you want to attack me and then I'll be the victim?
So here, so the first thing here is that you enjoy it. I hate it.
Okay.
I used to hate Ferris Bueller. The more I see it, the more I appreciate the comedy in it. And you dislike Ferris Bueller.
I just don't... Okay.
So let's do Breakfast Club first, then we'll go to Ferris Bueller.
Okay, we'll do Breakfast Club first. Okay, so you brought up ridiculous stereotypes. I'm not going to argue that too far, but I'm going to say that it covers there's overlap to it, and the fact is that if you watch the movie, you see that the stereotypes are fleshed out a lot more. Like, the wrestler jock isn't just a meathead. He actually, you know...
Now, if you're going to bring up the part where he cries because he tapes some kid's butt
because
together...
Because his dad's all weird.
That's got to be the stupidest thing in any movie I've
ever
seen.
It is pretty stupid. I was when I recently saw it on TV, I'm like, this part's kind of dumb, yeah. But the theme that it's talking about, you know, is relevant in the actual situation. You know, it's got an after school special side to it, I guess.
Well, the thing is, so here's some of my faults with it, and you can defend these as you
will. Let's just bullet point it. Like, what do you have problems with?
They're all okay. Judd Nelson.
Yeah.
Looks 40 years old in it.
That's true.
Emilio Estevez looks younger. Anthony Michael Hall looks younger. The women, you know, they're in the range.
Yeah.
Judd Nelson looks as old as the guy who plays the principal. And he always looked like that, even when he was a kid. I saw some movie there's some famous movie where he played like a little kid in it.
Judd Nelson?
Yeah, Judd Nelson, yeah. I don't remember what it was.
Gosh, I couldn't tell you.
Casablanca.
So he was in Casablanca.
When he was 4 years old, which makes him about 80-something now.
Yes.
He's a daywalker. That's the first thing, is that I don't like, I really don't like when they do that in high school movies. I think that... The younger the actors look, the more believable any high school situation is.
The more authentic that
yeah.
is to, like, their situation.
So there's that. Then there's, I really don't like melodrama. It's to me, it's an after-school special.
Yeah.
And a sub-point of that is the fact that each of these kids is, you know, I was that age, and I knew many people that age,
yeah.
and everyone has problems, but no one is that angsty about it. Nobody is that angsty as all those people are about it. And if they are, then they're more likely to be the type of person that would, you know, blow up a school than be caught and put in detention and make friends with guys who are there.
That's possible.
They're their opposites.
It is a different decade.
Yeah, I wasn't that age in whenever it was.
And
made.
You, where did you go to high school?
I was homeschooled.
Okay, see, I set you up for that. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I think remembered you
seeing
you at high school.
But you know, all my friends went to school. So,
that's right. But you did not.
No. Maybe I was able to pick and choose friends who didn't have angst problems.
It's possible you were able to do it, but it's also possible that you weren't able to see the angsty side of the relationship that is related to people that go to school. I mean, a lot of people say that school isn't so much about learning as it is about socializing.
Right.
And, like, learning.
Well, but the thing is, all these characters' problems were home problems.
They
all ended up talking about their parents. They all ended up talking about the weight that their parents put on them, and it all ends up being home issues and less about the school thing. The fact that they're all in the school is like, you know, that's what brings them together and forces them
yeah.
to have these conversations.
And those conflicts on some
yeah.
level too, I think.
Yeah. Okay, here's another thing I hated. When Emilio Estevez yells really loudly and the glass shatters.
That's
not going to happen.
Yeah,
I'm sorry that I'm nitpicking like this, because movies, you have to suspend your disbelief.
Exactly. You have to sort of throw those things out there, and I agree. Okay, well, I'll say, first of all, I enjoy the movie, but it's not like, you know, a super-duper favorite movie. It's probably just one I would say that if John Hughes did all of his little teen 80s movies, this one kind of – it brings enough material with it. And it kind of confines it enough, and it plays kind of like a screen, like a stage play, because they're forced to be in one place.
Right. Reservoir Dogs for kids.
It's got a good soundtrack.
Except for it was rated R.
Yeah. You got Bender, who Matt Groening himself has said is the reference
yeah.
to Bender from Futurama.
And I think his name in the movie was Bender Bending Rodriguez, wasn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. Bender Bending Rodriguez, because he was built in Mexico.
Yes. And he's 4 years old.
And what is he? He's 40% dolomite.
40% dolomite, and he's 30% zinc or something like
and
that.
And some percent of nickel, I
yeah.
think, too.
I don't know.
Doesn't add up to 100.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't, yeah.
Okay.
So you can defend more of this later, but I'm not done
okay.
Pointing
you
out
have
things
at
I don't
it.
Like about it. Yeah. So there's attempts at some sort of comedic moments in it, and they, to me, seem completely out of place. I can suspend my disbelief only so far, especially
yeah.
if it was a comedy, and it was just straight comedy, then I could believe anything that happened, because you're not meant to think that
mm-hmm.
comedies are based in the real world unless it's like As Good As It Gets, which was not even funny.
Okay.
You know? So the fact that they all get high and then do, you know, walk like an Egyptian around the school and dance to ridiculous songs and run around and each go and do some crazy things... where in reality all of them would just be laying back and giggling or something,
yeah.
and instead all these
eating
things happen.
Chips.
And how long are they supposed to be there? Do you know? Is it 8 hours? Nine hours?
It's
something like
a
like
full
that?
Yeah day.
Like
so
a full
like
day
a,
of school,
eight
7 hours
nine
or 8 hours
yeah.
or something like that. So at the end of this period of time, they have all completely changed as people. They're all either going to stand up for something or give in to something, or
at least that's what they're saying. They've had some kind of a cathartic process happen for all of them. That, I mean, and then where it goes from there, you never really know. I mean, some of them are probably going to go right back to the way they were. They might, you know, they're not going to be best friends and hang out in class. They're still going to go back to their peer groups, but there might be a little understanding there now. And they had their summit of different stereotypes, and now perhaps there can be healing.
Also, the letter that Anthony Michael Hall writes clearly labels them as their stereotypes, and I don't think that anyone would ever give in to that. I don't think.
But he does it. He does it with kind of a.
No, he does
cynicism.
It with disdain, yeah, and like he's making fun of the fact that that's kind of what everyone
thinks.
That's
what everyone
thinks.
That's how you see us as this, as that, as this.
But come on. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah,
come on.
Some of it, there's aspects of it that are melodramatic that I kind of cringe at, because I'm not a fan of melodrama too.
I you know,
I take it more of as a comedy in a lot more places than you do. I mean, not so much laugh out loud, ha ha ha, on the ground rolling around comedy, but like these are funny weird situations, like when Bender takes the bolt out of the door so that it keeps closing.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I get a kick out of that kind of straightforward sort of like, because that's sort of like realistic slapstick.
Maybe something that bothered me about Judd Nelson to make him look older is the fact that doesn't he have like a streak of color, like gray streak or something?
He has something weird like that in his
and
hair.
For some reason, that just makes me think of Reed Richards.
You think Mr. Fantastic was in the Breakfast Club? Yeah.
Okay, so I can't tell you that Breakfast Club is a bad movie. I just don't like it.
And I can see that. And I think, I'm like a 60-40 on it in a lot
of
ways.
So,
but if I want to put it, if I'm talking about that category, I'm going to say at the time when it was made, I think it's one of the better, like, different groups coming, kind of getting along, high school type movies. It isn't so much parodying that. It doesn't seem to really talk down to teenagers. I mean, even if they are sort of stereotypical and maybe a little hyper angsty, but of course that's going to happen in any movie.
It's supposed to give them
it's
voice.
Elevated emotion.
It's supposed
emotion,
to give them voice and have them a forum to.
And it doesn't, it's not just like some kind of Shakespeare story that they just took and decided to transplant with teenagers.
Oh, you got a problem with that?
No, not necessarily. It's just,
not a big fan of 10 Things I Hate About You.
Or
Or
whatever else.
Yeah, there's another one too. It had the girl from
Taming of the Shrew.
Sabrina the Teenage Witch was in it.
Oh yeah, You Drive Me Crazy.
Something like that, yeah. That was also based on one of Shakespeare's
really?
Various comedies.
Oh,
quote unquote comedies.